think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Nikki Haley now very much has her sights set on South Carolina, her home state, but she's got an uphill battle here, Marky. She had really bet so much of her campaign on her performance in New Hampshire. Here in South Carolina, she is lagging behind former President Trump by double digits. We've got some of our latest numbers here from our Decision Desk HQ team. They show former President Donald Trump in the lead here in South Carolina. He's got a 33-point lead. Nikki Haley is there in a distant second with about 27% of the vote. That's a significant margin with just a few weeks to go before voters head to the polls here in South Carolina. A major roadblock for Haley here has been the slew of Trump endorsements from her home state of South Carolina. There you see five of the state's six GOP House members backing Trump. You also have both senators supporting the former president, as well as a number of state officials, including the South Carolina governor. But Nikki Haley, in her speech last night, remaining defiant despite last night's loss, saying that she's in this for the long haul.
She's in it for the long haul. Now, again, that is a News Nation report on the New Hampshire primary last night. Trump did win. He did not win by the last projections that were being made before the vote was tallied. It was closer. The last tally I showed that it would be something like 20 points difference. And it ended up being about 11 to 12 points. So many can say, see, Trump is vulnerable. Nikki Haley made a very good run. Or, bottom line is, she came in second. But is that enough to keep her going? She's indicating it is. We're going to break it all down for you. Got a lot to cover on this. And also, in the last hour, in case you missed it, we were airing some clips of an audio recording between Arizona Senate candidate Kari Lake and the Arizona GOP chair, Jeff DeWitt, where Jeff DeWitt, it's hard to say if he's suggesting Kari Lake step aside. He does say there's some people back east that think it would be better if you wait, maybe pause for a couple years on all politics, that maybe they could find a business or position for you that would give you a lot of money. Money, money, money. And Kari Lake is saying, no, 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 it's not right. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. And then it also moves into a discussion that I would call damn near extortion, if not a threat, that, you know, something could happen to you. You hear that coming up shortly. We heard some of it in the last hour, but I know some of you can't listen to both. And if you can, I would go back and pull it up and listen to it and what we're getting ready to present. All right, let me set the stage for you again. Here we are, January 24, 2024, second hour of Larry Connors USA. And we're here Monday through Friday night, 6 to 8 p.m. for you. And during the presentation on air, we are also streaming video. It's available at Larry Connors USA, Facebook, Twitter, Rumble, or News Talk STL, Facebook, Rumble, Twitter, and on YouTube. Larry Connors USA is not back on YouTube yet. So however you choose to pull it up and watch, at your pleasure, please do so. In case you missed something, you want to listen to it again. And more importantly, if you would then share with four or five of your friends, relatives, just to get them involved. Because believe me, once they hear the program, they're going to be hooked just like you are. And even send it to some enemies. I love those on the other side to be listening. It makes them berserk. Which, by the way, also, in that first hour, we had an interview with a guy, my guest, that many love to hate. That would include Speaker Tim Jones, who has his program with Christopher Arps right before we come on the air. The guest was John Leboutier, former New York congressman, went in under Reagan. He is a never-Trumper. You'll want to hear what he had to say about the New Hampshire victory for Trump. But When all was said and done last night, and the count was tabulated, Trump did win. Let me get the exact numbers here in front of you. I don't want to, if I sign them off the top of my head, I'll probably be off enough that some people are going to say, oh, you're not giving us all the facts. Well, I want you to get the facts exactly. Trump had 54.6%, Haley 43.2%. DeSantis was on the ballot. He got less than 1%. So that 54.6, Haley at 43, you can round up or down however you want. You're looking at 11 to 12 points. When the last projected numbers before the polls closed, I think, was around Trump would win by 20. He didn't win by that big. But he won, which is the key. And Nikki Haley, once she saw the writing on the wall, she came out and spoke to her supporters.
I want to congratulate Donald Trump on his victory tonight. He earned it, and I want to acknowledge that. Now, you've all heard the chatter among the political class. They're falling all over themselves saying this race is over.
It's not over!
Well, I have news for all of them. Woo! New Hampshire is first in the nation. It is not the last in the nation. This race is far from over.
And it is far from over, at least as to what yet is to come. How she does is the other issue. We have the South Carolina, home state for Nikki, coming up the 24th of next month. And South Carolina residents can vote in either, regardless of party. There's also, in limited polling, South Carolina showing Trump with a 30-point lead over Haley. You heard the News Nation report on South Carolina. I mean, on Trump was again leading, as I just stated. But I was looking here at the Super Tuesday in March. That is where one-third of all delegates are in play. So Super Tuesday is going to be big for her as well. But for now, Trump is basking in glory.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Whoa! Well, I want to thank everybody. This is a fantastic state. This is a great, great state. You know, we won New Hampshire three times now. Three. We win it every time. We win the primary. We win the generals. We've won it, and it's a very, very special place to me. It's very important. If you remember, in 2016, we came here, and we needed that win, and we won by 21 points, and it was great.
And he had several of those who were against him at one point standing behind him, one of them being Senator Tim Scott, who was appointed to fulfill a Senate seat by Nikki Haley when she was governor, and he was a congressman. And, of course, then he ends up running for the presidency. And last night, he's standing behind Trump, because he has thrown his support now to Trump once he got out of the race. And Al Sharpton had remarks about that. He was rebuking Tim Scott, saying Scott's rhetoric is humiliating. Sharpton was saying, and actually predicting, Al Sharpton predicting that Trump will be the GOP nominee. And he said the former president is demanding people bow to him, and one of them is Senator Scott. And Sharpton said, this is precious coming from Al Sharpton. He said, there have been a few moments in my life where I've been more embarrassed than watching Scott praise Trump at the former president's victory. It was humiliating to watch what Tim Scott did as a sitting senator. Listen, I can think of several things embarrassing to Sharpton, but I won't spend time, yours nor mine, on it. Trump at one point did turn to Scott and say, you, since you voted for me and support me, you must really hate her, speaking about Nikki Haley, the very person who appointed him as Senate to fulfill a term. Scott joined Trump at the microphone and said, I just love you. Didn't say anything bad against Nikki. Sharpton said, that interaction bothered me all night. He says, not a good thing in my life to watch Tim do that. He has a right to be a Republican. He has a right to do Donald Trump. But to do it in such a way that is so humiliating was troubling. I'm surprised that Al Sharpton finds anything that he considers humiliating and embarrassing, considering his history. All right, there is an audio recording between Kerry Lake, running for Arizona Senate, and is considered a very close race right now, and Arizona GOP Chair Jeff DeWitt having his conversation with Kerry Lake. It was, as I said, played some in the previous hour, but not everything. So I want to begin with going through the whole thing and let you hear all that we couldn't crowd into that hour. Let's begin with GOP Chair DeWitt trying to get Terry Lake out of the Senate race.
There are very powerful people that want to keep you out.
I know they do.
But they're willing to put their money where their mouth is in a big way. So, this conversation never happened.
This is crazy, though. They should want me. I'm a great candidate. People love me. These people are corrupt.
Well, maybe you're right.
They are right. They are corrupt.
Maybe. This is your rap. Don't go. Do you ever, though? I'll get myself in trouble. This, if you say no, that's just fine. It's your choice. Don't tell people.
They're going to try to have me murdered.
I thought he's terrible. Things world, man. If that stuff that came out last week is right about the cartel stuff, man. They say the cartel's operating in 50 states right now. Like all 50. You know? Mm-hmm. So...
So what's going on? Who is it? What?
Forget the who. Let me just tell you the what. Let's just say there are people calling around saying, gosh, no, they can't repeat this. Never repeat this. If you say no, don't. Because I got offered to buy out. Because then we lose our ability to get things done in the future.
Here's my problem. Rather than just say, let's work with her. She's a great candidate. Because they don't own me. And it pisses me off.
And, of course, he was saying, I'm not going to get names. Don't worry about who. And he mentioned when she said, well, unless they're going to murder me, he said, well, the drug cartels are pretty active. What is he trying to suggest? I'll leave it to you. I have my opinion. But Kerry says, here's why they want me out of the way.
It's about control.
I don't know if it's about control. It's about... being on the team, I guess that. You know what I mean?
They want to be on the team.
They want you to be on their team.
But
just team, you know?
But if they're pushing a globalist agenda, I can't do that. So what do they want? What do they want me to do?
They want you to stay out for 2 years. But, I'll tell you what I can offer you. But, I said you can do whatever you want. It's a talking head, isn't it? So... the ask of me was, it's kind of funny. So the ask I got today from back east was, is there any companies out there or something that could just put her on the payroll and give her, to keep her out? And I said, well, what are you willing to do? Whatever we need to do.
This is about defeating Trump. And I think that's a bad, bad thing for our country.
Somebody out east, what do we do to get rid of her, put her on a payroll somewhere? And again, she said, I think it's a bad idea what they're pushing. But DeWitt, the GOP chair, is not done.
Where are we in 2 years if they steal the election again?
Listen to what you're saying. Why don't we do something about it? So that we, the people, can pick our...
What can we do?
I'm not willing to accept that. Then I'm going to be the biggest pain in these people's... Go back and tell them that. No. I'm running, and I'm going to be the biggest pain in their...
And I'm willing to tell them that.
And they're going to have to f***ing kill me to stop me. I'm not going to pause for 2 years. The battle is now. I'm offended by whoever these people are that they're trying to buy me out of.
Well, you should be honored.
I'm offended that there's people back there who just don't give a f*** about our country.
Do you understand, though? You should be honored. That means they know how powerful you are.
Well, I can tell them that.
If you weren't powerful, they wouldn't want to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Right? You should be, very few people get this.
I know. I'm pissed that they don't care more about our country. It's all about the mighty dollar to them. And that's offensive.
It is offensive. And then DeWitt actually almost lays money on the table.
Just to say, is there a number at which...
I can be bought?
Not be bought.
That's what it's about.
You can take a pause for a couple years.
No.
And then go right back to what you're doing.
Mm-mm. No. 10 million, 20 million, 30... No. A billion? No. This is not about money. This is about our country. I think it's disturbing that they would even... That anybody would think this is...
No, to be fair, even me, I'll say this. I want a fresh face right now for the reason that I've never seen anyone... I can't think of a single person in a federal race who lost, ran in and won. Can't think of it. If you can think of it, let me know.
I am not going to let these people who hate our country tell me not to run. You should call them and tell them to get behind me.
I mean, I
can win, and they should get behind me.
I will happily say those words.
Yeah.
Do you think my words will carry any weight? No.
Okay, well, did you think you would come in here and that I would be bought?
It's not being bought.
Yes, it is.
It is
being bought.
No.
They are trying to buy me out of running.
And he's trying to flatter, saying, oh, you should feel great that they think you're such a threat that they want you out of the way. And they'll make a very comfortable life for you. Now, this recording is not clear yet as to how it got leaked, who was making it. The first reported by the Daily Mail, and at the Trump's New Hampshire primary victory party last night, Lake told an NBC reporter that the GOP chair in Arizona, DeWitt, he's got to resign. We can't have somebody who is corrupt and compromised running the Republican Party, which brings to mind how much was he going to get paid if he could convince Kerry to get out of the way. There had to be a bag of money at the end of that for him, I believe. Once again, Kerry Lake.
These people are un-American, and I think they're unethical, and I would be absolutely immoral if I did that.
Again,
that's immoral. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror if I, you know.
It's very powerful people.
You know what it is? The people don't get to choose their elected officials unless they're pre-approved by the swamp. And the swamp doesn't pre-approve of me.
You need a strong party to help.
I think
you
should go public with this and then say, hey,
no.
These people don't want to, they don't want, they're...
And then I turn my key in my car and I go,
I know.
I like myself.
Tell them I'm not flattered. I'm offended that they...
Don't tell anybody we had this conversation.
I'm offended that they don't care about our country more.
I actually wish you'd just give me a counteroffer this big. Give me a counter.
I can't be bought.
Come on.
I can't.
But he said, give me a counteroffer. He said, I can't be bought. And he said, don't tell anybody we had this conversation. She said, you should go public. Oh, no. I can't do that. I mean, I go to turn the key in my car and... What the hell is going on there? We should have a federal inquiry. The FBI should be looking at that. Again, I don't really care how the tape got out. If Kerry released it, great for her. I doubt she did. I'm not going to say. I don't know if she did or didn't. But I'm glad we're hearing that kind of talk is what they're trying to do. Evidence of clear corruption inside politics. Coming up, how the left subverted the CIA and FBI. Remember, lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Question, do you know what vermiculite is? It is an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes and public buildings. Looks like kitty litter, but often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard for you. Wellington has what is called the General, a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Hang on, there's something else you should know. Many of you might qualify for up to a $4,000 rebate. You should at least contact Wellington to see if you qualify. And here's something else. Wellington arrives at the time they give you, not sometime within 4 hours. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
You guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local and global.
Oh, people, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local, really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9, 94.1
and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Ackerman Toyota had a great 2023, so Jay asked me to thank you for all of your support. Loyal customers making Ackerman Toyota number one in St. Louis Toyota sales. Number one out of the 75 Toyota dealers in the region in Camry and Corolla sales. Ackerman has the lowest prices, great selection. Visit Ackerman at Hampton and 44 or online, AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota, for life.
This is News Talk STL.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back. My guest comes with extensive credentials. He is currently a senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy, also president of Georgetown Research, a political risk private intel company. Previously worked for the CIA in Central America, did a lot of the reference to Soviet Empire's breakup, taught history and methods at America's premier intel schools. Work appearing in the New York Post, the Washington Times, Washington Examiner, the Federalist, Wall Street Journal, now out with a new book, Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. J. Michael Waller, welcome aboard, sir.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
Well, the title itself, Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War to Heroes to Deep State, I mean, immediately there's what happened to transition our premier agencies on intel from dealing with true threats to America to becoming a threat against American people?
Well, it happened so slowly over such a long period of time that, you know, when people noticed it, they were kind of called out as being, you know, paranoid or whatever. And then sure. All of a sudden the dam broke.
And the dam being?
The dam. Well, it's all that pressure built up. What happened after 9/11, they were hiring a lot of people from the junior levels who, you know, from West Coast tech companies and now the more radicalized colleges. And then they end up becoming analysts and managers. And now they're mid-level and upper level management after all this time. But where the dam broke was in August 2011, when President Obama issued an executive order to effectively impose critical theory, that's DEI and wokeness, on all government agencies, and with a particular vengeance going after the intelligence community.
Why would that be, as you said, a particular vengeance of going after them? And of course, I've been opposed to the DEI in any part of our military or our government or private anyway, but you say vengeance.
Right. He never was comfortable with the law enforcement or intelligence or anything like that, but he went right in, and this was during the time of hunting down Osama bin Laden, and then afterward, even Leon Panetta, who was Obama's CIA director, wrote in his memoir that the White House was unusually controlling of the CIA. He didn't name names, but now we know why, and this is Valerie Jarrett, yeah, and the Obamas and the radicalized Chicago political machine that came in with Obama that thought, okay, now we're in charge. President George W. Bush, after 9/11, centralized the then decentralized intelligence community, centralized it. So now if you put people in control at the top, you can politicize them from above. So it was in December, in August 2011, that it really began in earnest.
You brought up 9/11 and, of course, the decentralization we had underway. Agencies wouldn't share with each other. They wanted it to be, it's our material, and we're going to keep it to ourselves. And there were obviously lax efforts and possibilities of threats that went uncaught and unheeded because they were so tight-lipped in their own little group, their own silo. You, first of all, as a CIA intel agent for all these years and knowledge of it, There was a need to correct that. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even my involvement with the CIA began. I was never a CIA employee. This was when William Casey was director under Reagan, under President Reagan's first term. And he came in and thought, man, the CIA is producing lousy analysis. We can't detect what the Soviets are doing. We know they're behind terrorism, but the CIA analysts can't figure it out. So he set up back channels. So I was he had amateurs doing it, like when he was in the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, during World War II. Well, I ended up being one of those amateurs, and it was all funded out of Bill Casey's pocket. But I was working in Central America, collecting intelligence for the White House, a CIA man at the White House, and for Casey's own private network to be able to prove to the CIA apparatus itself that this stuff is easy to collect and it really is out there.
And you had the FBI doing its thing, and the FBI not supposed to be involved in foreign intel. Of course, if you get citizens pulled in now with the FISA Act and everything else. But for a period of time when they had their own intel that they weren't sharing, then they were under a greater threat. But now the threat is from the intel agencies.
Right. I mean, and you can kind of understand how it came together. You know, Bush was a new president. 9/11 hit. Turns out the CIA had indicators that something was going to happen, and the FBI had other indicators that something was going to happen, but they weren't talking to each other.
Yeah.
So Bush sits down with his brand new FBI director, Robert Mueller, a Marine, a decent man. He'd only been on the job a week, and he pointed at him and said, I want you to make sure this never happens again. And then that's when Mueller centralized the FBI, put in a giant, you know, 60 new positions at the top management level, centralized it, and then when the Bush administration merged the whole intelligence community together under one central, you know, 17 different agencies, now under one central leader. And it seemed like a good idea at the time to prevent what you just said, the stovepiping, where everybody has their own stuff and they don't share it. But also there were laws like the Patriot Act to empower these agencies even more. But the Bush administration, both houses of Congress, both parties realized that the Patriot Act was so dangerous that it was supposed to expire after a few years.
Yeah.
But Congress kept renewing it for what? For safety and security.
Yeah, there's still big questions about that. But as you point out, both institutions ended up doing the merge, and now big intel is controlled by cultural Marxists, many of them out of the Ivy Leagues, populating the CIA and the FBI, and that they're all about, as you said, DEI, as you call it, a house of mirrors.
Right. So you have to dig and look to find it and have your own, you know, inside networks to find out, which is why I wrote the book. But what everybody can see happening to our military, you know, the not just wokeness, but the just lies and plagiarism coming out of the Ivy League, like Harvard and Princeton and so many of these other schools. And then you combine. Now, facts are no longer facts. Facts are what you want them to be.
Right.
There are no ethics anymore in scholarship. You can steal whatever you want and become president of a prestigious university, and the whole board will back you up until the billionaires start taking their money away. You know, so it becomes okay. And so you have this laziness and intellectual laziness and intellectual dishonesty where facts are no longer facts.
Well, there was a time the public didn't really know a lot of this was going on. What they were getting was I'll even give the leftist media some allowance here in a past that they didn't really understand either, but they thought, well, we were doing the right thing. And then pretty soon they become an arm of big intel.
Sure. Yeah. And then this is when you caught up during the right thing. When I was a kid in high school, I got involved in the anti-nuclear movement because I cared about the environment. And then I went through this. They started training me. Some professionals came in from California and then started berating me because I was so naive, because I wanted to protect the environment, when they said it's all about overthrowing American capitalism. Well, that's when I realized I was a dupe. I was 15 years old and I realized, you know, I'm coming after you, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life going against you. And that's how it ended up. This was in the 1970s. So I understand when people think, hey, well, aren't you, you know, against bigotry and prejudice? Don't you think that, you know, people of other cultures, races should, of course, but that's what equal opportunity is all about. And that's right. What, you know, excellence. But it actually, literally the intelligence community ditched the equal employment opportunity regulations. It's all documented in the book, and replaced it with DEI. So it was no longer about competence. And in fact, Obama's intelligence leaders, General Clapper, who was head of the whole intelligence community, and his CIA director, Brennan, they never, ever spelled out how DEI would improve America's intelligence capabilities.
No, and they just kept their mouth silent, knowing that it wasn't going to do any good anyway. But why speak out against Obama? And there's where we come to the present, and now we know more about this. And, of course, you have to rely on, and I always tell people, don't trust me at what I say. Always inquire, investigate, never follow someone blindly. But we've gotten to the point now where too much of the public just gobbles it up like pablum, and they don't even ask.
Right. And some know better, but they're afraid to ask because they're in their careers, they have families, they have skills, or they view it as a vocation. It's like, I don't like this, I don't want to be part of this, but if I leave my post, some woke person is going to take it. Or, hey, I'm just 5 years away of getting pension. I'm not going to give that up just to fight a losing battle. So there's a lot of people on the inside whose hearts are in the right place. And they've seen what's happened to the whistleblowers, like the suspendables from the FBI. And so they thought, well, you know, where do you think they've got no place to go?
So where do we go? It was when you said no place to go, but we've got to go somewhere. We have a future ahead of us. What do we do to stop it or curb it, at least going forward?
Well, here's the issue. You've had now from Obama's first term up until today, this unbroken wokeification of our FBI and CIA. It even happened under Trump because the president didn't understand it and his team didn't see it happening. And there was just no focus on it. But now that everybody knows and more people are becoming aware, if people behind President Trump with him put together an action plan of what to do, there's a lot that the president can do with executive orders, right, the day after the election, moves ahead, puts the team together so that by inauguration day, they're there to impose executive orders from day one, which is just what Biden did with his team and Obama did previously with his team. But Trump didn't do it before. Right, now he knows.
Now you would know. So now in the last 20 seconds for you, what do you suggest he do in the first couple days, first action?
So you've got to dismantle the FBI, keep all the capabilities that matter to the country, parcel them out to other agencies, and then make the FBI part of our history. That's the first part, because it's just become too powerful and wasteful. Just same with the CIA, divide it up into two different organizations and then cut out a lot of the deadwood in there, and then we'll be on our way to something better.
At least there's a hope for that. I want to thank you very much for your time, J. Michael Waller. The book is titled Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
You bet. J. Michael Waller. Coming up, FBI seizing bank deposits illegally.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Sometimes you want to do something extra special for someone. Vincent's Jewelers could help you. Maybe you want to do something for yourself, mark a date, something you accomplished. It doesn't have to be anything really expensive, but it has to mean something now and for the future. Vincent's, locally owned, just asked for the chance to work with you, as they have with me, on Olive, just east of 270. Every day, new specials at vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
One of the five most traumatic experiences in life is moving. I can assure you that McGuire Moving can help ease that pressure. Moving into a new home or a new business, locally, internationally, McGuire is rated number one. More than 80 years of experience. Free estimate, call McGuire, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
And he's bad, bad, Leroy Brown, the baddest man in the whole damn town, better than old King Kong, meaner than the jungle.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So following up on the comments from my guest and his book again is how the CIA, let me get the exact title. I want to give it to you incorrectly again. It was J. Michael Waller, who is the author of the book, and talking about how we have lost control of our intel agencies, the CIA and the FBI. The title of the book, Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes, when they were, to Deep State Villains. And he was talking about what we need to do, what the next president should do if they really want to set things right, dismantle the FBI. And that's not the first time I've heard that. It's a matter of then what's replacing it and where we go from there. And the same for the CIA. With that in mind, I'm looking at a piece written by Jonathan Bronetsky for The Federalist saying the first priority for the next GOP president would be sacking unaccountable bureaucrats. Same thing we were talking about there. He adds, Democrats' control of the administrative state is a DEFCON 1 level crisis for our system of government and by extension, our way of life. And this, quoting Heritage Foundation President Kevin Roberts in Davos last week said, the administrative state is the greatest threat to democracy in the U.S., and we need to end it. Now, by administrative, we're talking about those with the CIA, FBI, whatever that's being used to lord over the people. I've got a perfect story dealing with that involving the FBI coming up, but before I go there, let's go north of the U.S. border into Canada, and a Canadian federal judge, because they have the same thing going on there, a Canadian federal judge found Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's use of a counterterrorism law to shut down the Freedom Convoy trucker protest against vaccine mandates and other lockdown measures that he put in place in 2022. The judge ruled those were unconstitutional. Even in Canada, they were saying unconstitutional. Judge ruled that use of the Emergencies Act by the Liberal government of Justin Trudeau to shut down the series was unreasonable. It came in a case in response filed by the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, the Canadian Constitutional Foundation, and others who argued the protest did not meet the legal threshold for the government to use powers granted under the Act, which had never been used and was originally intended as a means of combating terrorists. That's what they were doing in Canada. Okay, that's Canada. In the U.S., we have higher standards. Or do we? January 6th. It was wrong in many ways, but a lot of people got caught up in a dragnet that was pulling anyone that even walked into the Capitol that day. They did nothing wrong. Anyone even flew into D.C. that day. They've been under suspicion of being involved in so-called insurrection. And they were using insurrection as a means to go full-blown against everyone, and yet there is not one charge of insurrection against anyone. Trespassing, threatening an officer, things of this nature. And some of those may be justified, maybe not. But in many cases, some are still sitting in jail, the D.C. gulag, just waiting to have their case heard. Their pretrial was postponed because of COVID concerns at one point. And now there's a backlog, and they're still waiting. No ability to communicate even with their own attorneys, much less family members, often in isolation. That is not what we do in this nation. Correction. That is not what we should do in this nation. But that is what we are doing. This government has been weaponized at every administrative level to go after the American people with any thread they can find. Are there some people that should be jailed and should spend time in prison for actions that day? Yes. But even those are way too harsh, especially when you consider the lenient leftist attitude that if you're caught robbing a place, unless you steal a certain amount of even a theft, much less a robbery, no one's going to charge you or it won't be a big deal. Or you run over some kid and kill him, you're going to be free almost immediately without bail. The IRS, the FBI whistleblowers have come forward, have certainly laid out a lot for us to consider. And speaking of one, reference the FBI, looking at this piece, I forgot to gather the copy of the source of it. Is a good source. Let me see if I can back it up and see here somewhere, because I really like to always keep you guys informed. All right, it's Epoch Times. I always want you to know the source. I never try to hide it from you. So you can check it out yourself and say, Larry, you lied about that. You'll never find me lying about it. Would I make a mistake? I could. And if I make a mistake, I should own it and owe up to it. But this Epoch Times piece is dealing with a story that, here's how it begins. In 2021, FBI agents raided U.S. private vaults, that's a business in California, that allowed people to rent safe deposit box anonymously based on belief, the FBI acted on the belief that criminals were using the service. They may well have been. I'm going to even acknowledge that might well have been underway. But now, the ruling from a federal appeals court just yesterday is that the FBI seizure of the contents from those safe deposit boxes during their raid violated the U.S. Constitution. The search warrant stated agents could only open the boxes to inventory their contents and identify the owners for the return of their property. However, agents brought drug-sniffing dogs and planned to set aside cash worth more than $5,000 with the intent to seize the money. They searched the contents of about 700 safe deposit boxes. When people who rented boxes asked the FBI for their belongings back after the raid. The FBI refused, saying it was going to file for forfeiture or transfer ownership to the government. The renters of the boxes then turned around and sued. Now, the way the law is, if you're using your car to transport illegal drugs, laundered money, narcotics of any type, and you get pulled over and stopped, they can take possession of your car. If you've got it in your house and they get a tip and they have a legal search warrant and go in and find it, you lose your house. So in this case, when people did, who rented the boxes, wanted to get their money back, and they were denied it, well, then they ended up suing. A U.S. district judge previously ruled in favor of the government, finding the search was covered by what is known as an inventory exception to the requirement for a warrant in the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment. That in itself sounds a little murky, and I'm not even a legal scholar. Then added, according to the Epic article, that exception, so apparently it does exist, does not apply to the raid on U.S. private vaults, according to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. The ruling hinged largely on how the exception requires searches to operate on standardized instructions and highlighted how the FBI in that Beverly Hills raid used supplemental, customized instructions. The U.S. Circuit judge in his ruling wrote, once the government begins adding a set of customized instructions to a standardized inventory policy, particularly the type of custom instructions presented by this case, the entire search stops being conducted pursuant to a standardized policy. In the ruling, he wrote, no probable cause. Now, I know a lot of it was wordy, but it just centered on those last three words. No probable cause for them to continue. During oral arguments, the appeals court compared the search to the writs of assistance, or that would be unlimited searches executed by British authorities before America was found. The judge said at the time, what you've got is a declaration or an understanding that from the beginning, the authorities intend to search all the boxes, all of them. There was not probable cause available with respect to all the boxes, but they did it anyway. Now, how do we distinguish that from what the colonists were upset about and, of course, led to our Fourth Amendment? Excellent point, Judge. All right, you can go into this bank vault company and go after eight or nine boxes you've got listed. Doesn't mean you can take all the rest of them. The government lawyer said, well, this was a unique situation. It involved rampant illegal conduct. And U.S. Private Vaults has acknowledged in a plea agreement. When they say a plea agreement, you know they had something all over their heads to step in and agree. Prison time themselves or what? But in a plea agreement, they acknowledged to recruiting criminals and conspiring to launder money. And the judge said, we note that is particularly troubling that the government has failed to provide a limiting principle to how far a hypothetical inventory search conducted pursuant to customized instructions can go. Many of the plaintiffs did get their belongings back, but they pressed forward with the case. One final statement from when it got remanded back to the U.S. District Case Court, a senior attorney with the Institute for Justice representing the plaintiffs said the opinion draws a line in the sand to ensure something like this never happens again. Now the government is on notice its actions violated the Fourth Amendment. But I'm going to have to disagree with him. I know he's a senior attorney for the Institute for Justice, but it draws a line in the sand ensuring this doesn't happen again. What did we just hear the other day? The FBI is asking banks send us information on your clients and what they're buying with their credit cards. Are they buying guns, ammunition, Bibles, anything under this category we consider might be, what, hazardous, dangerous, insurrectionist? We want. Send us those records. So they're not actually having to go get them, and the banks are, quote, voluntarily complying. And again, voluntarily complying means they're worried about trouble if they don't. That is not the way the nation should work. That is not the way the Constitution was set up. Just by a veiled threat will make people fold and bend over. Speaking about bending over, been on a passenger jet lately? Did you know, of course, you have to go through TSA agents that might want you to raise your arms, search around your crotch, or make you stand in the machine. But there's a way to get around that.
TSA is under an avalanche of criticism and scrutiny for putting up signs at Miami airport telling illegal immigrants they could pass through security checkpoints without photo IDs. How can they do that? We're just a generation after 9/11 when 19 terrorists boarded planes to kill thousands of Americans.
Because they work for Joe Biden. But they're right. It's not fair. It's destructive. It's dangerous. Democrat governance is destroying this country. I'm hoping Democrat voters understood what they voted for and what they're getting. A dollar they held at the start of the Biden administration is now worth 85 cents. So even though inflation's slowing, that damage has been done. The open border, again, that is destroying small towns and large towns throughout America. We haven't even begun to feel the full ramifications of the open border policy.
And I agree fully with him, and that being Wisconsin Senator Mike Johnson. And you heard the Fox reporter saying, in Miami, there's a sign posted, if you're illegal, go through this line over here. They don't check them. They don't verify who they are. They don't, many of them have any kind of identification, and yet they let them board planes. They even write them out a script, a ticket to get on the plane. To where they want to go. Now, if you were a terrorist and you were looking for a way to get on a plane and bring it down, do you want to go to the TSA line where they check you and scan you? Or do you want to go there in the illegal line and just no hablé inglés and someone comes along and tries to speak Spanish? No, not either. In other words, just put me on the plane. We are going to have, I'm afraid, sooner than later, a terrorist action involving a commercial airliner by one of these who just simply was given a pass to go on board. Pray that it doesn't happen. Certainly pray it doesn't happen to you and your family, but I'm afraid it's going to be a reality more than a fantasy. We've locked down airports. I mean, when we've got old women in wheelchairs that have to be taken out and almost strip searched. We've got mamas with babies, and they're not being allowed to watch over their baby all the time while they're being checked. I mean, you know, should I worry about them as well? Sure. If you don't do it, then you're opening up another possibility. But this is an obvious open door. Why? Because of Biden's open door policy. Thank you, Mr. Biden, and all the Democrats supporting it, and some Republicans. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.